This is The Think Tank, talking about the major political, economic, and social issues of the week. With Dr. Mike O'Neill and hosted by Mike Russell. KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com. The Think Tank.
I would be remiss, I think we would be remiss, if we didn't cover the presidential debate that was this week. And let me tell you something. It was, compared to the first three, Doc, it was a snooze fest. I'm not going to lie to you. It was absolutely boring. There were no fireworks, and I was utterly disappointed because if I love to do one thing, it's make fun of politicians.
I agree, and there's a reason for that. All the candidates got very testy about some of the questions that were asked in the CNBC debate.
Yeah, they did.
Some of which were there's a difference. There's two kinds. There's the hard question that really pins somebody down on something, and there were some of that. But there were also some that were just overly focusing on things that really weren't very important, but had this sort of zinger quality.
Let's understand the moderators. The moderators got a tough rap here. They did, because the moderators were following their marching orders by their superiors. Get us the ratings. Do that. They're better journalists than that. And they know it.
Let me suggest something else that I think plays to this, and that is when you have multiple moderators, I think there's a competition for who can ask the most provocative question.
I would agree.
Not necessarily the most insightful, but the most provocative. So I think what you saw was partially a reaction to that. And frankly, as a result of that, they not only cut back on the gotcha stuff, they cut back on the substance, and you got really, really more softball questions than we had gotten before. But I think some of that is just a function of the structure. Even if you want to go back, the most entertainment value was clearly the first debate. That was the Fox one.
Right.
But even if you look at that, there wasn't much substance there. What they asked in every person's case, they asked the question that everybody was thinking about. You know, the one that was, you know, if you're sitting at home and you're saying, this is the controversy about this guy, so ask him a hard question about that, which they did.
Mm-hmm.
Wasn't necessarily delving into policy, but it was.
But at that point, there was entertainment. There was no policy at that point. They had all essentially just announced their candidacy. I mean, it was relatively new. It wasn't like everyone had come out and announced their tax plan or their immigration reform plan. There really wasn't any substance there. It was just, hi, I would like to introduce myself to the world. I'm running for president.
And it did that.
Yeah.
But let me suggest there is another format. And what I'm trying to make in this segment, I want to make the point that I think the format sort of produces the result. And some of that is the format. And some of that is just there's a difference between having 10 candidates and three. There was a debate that you probably never heard about, a forum, actually, not a debate, because you really can't have none of these are debates. You can't have a debate with 10.
Correct. Can't really have a debate with three. It's just it's confusing.
A 2-hour sequential interview. Rachel Maddow had each of the Democratic candidates eyeball to eyeball for 40 minutes. And the format was wonderful. And it worked better because they weren't on the stage together. So you got 40 minutes with each one. And I want to tell you that, you know, I follow this stuff pretty closely, and I learned something about each one of them.
Okay. And I can imagine you didn't learn anything bad about any of them, except for those running against Hillary Clinton. Rachel Maddow did not.
Absolutely.
Did she really?
Absolutely she did. Huh. I think she asked Hillary Clinton the most damning question I could imagine.
It
wasn't the silly stuff about emails, which frankly is going nowhere. They're trying to make an issue. You know what the most damning question is?
Chris Christie closed a bridge down for an hour, and then he's not qualified to run be a president. So, yes, it is. Emails are definitely important.
Hillary, the most damning question she asked her, say, look at your list of contributors. Look at the speeches you've given to Wall Street, which you've gotten paid hundreds of thousands of dollars for. The amount of money in your campaign that is going after people in Wall Street. And her hard question was, you know, how can we trust you to represent the American people when you've got this kind of indebtedness to Wall Street?
And she said,
she didn't have a really good answer.
Of course she didn't. She hasn't answered anything.
What she said was, in effect, trust me. It was like, if you knew me, it was a hard. And the interviews were not like that. By the way, if I were to suggest, and I'm not suggesting Rachel Maddow for all this, but I loved this format. I would love to see one of those with and I'm thinking through the people that are just thoughtful, you know, on both sides. David Brooks would be high up there.
All right.
George Wool would be up there. There's a petition on change.gov to have John Stewart would be superb as a moderator. The three of them. You got two more conservatives, one liberal, but what they have one thing in common is that they're all very thoughtful people. You let each one of those have 40 minutes with each candidate one-on-one, you will learn more than you have when you get everybody sitting on the when they're all on the on the dais together. You know what you get? You get an attempt to produce zingers. Let me give you an example of what you're getting with the current debate. If we can roll up the tape on that.
Ronald Reagan was strong, but Ronald Reagan didn't
Ronald Reagan walked away at Reykjavik. He walked away. He quit talking
Can I finish with my time?
Why does she keep interrupting everybody?
Yeah.
Boy. Terrible.
Yeah, I'd like to finish my response, basically.
So basically, what you're getting there is who's quick on their feet, who can deliver a zinger. You know, is that really the measure of what somebody is going to be like as a president?
Okay, if we're gonna say what we really need, what we really need is each one of these people to tell us who their cabinet's going to be, announce all of their financial policies, their foreign policy. They need to put it all out on the table for the American people to see. If we really want to see who we want to run, this country, that's what we really need.
At one level, I love it in terms of the cabinet. You know why? I guess I don't. In thinking about it for just a second, that's an intriguing idea. I'd be afraid that they would pick a cabinet that would be designed to get them votes rather than the cabinet that they really want. They might have to compromise that.
How about this?
But I do like, I mean, it is intriguing. Tell me more about what you're actually going to do. Absolutely.
How about this then? Tell me who your czars are going to be. Tell me who the non-vetted and approved people in your staff are going to be. That tells me more than anybody else.
Well,
because if Obama ran with Cass Sunstein, wouldn't have been in the White House.
Whoever that is. Let me just one last point. The job of a president. No president ever has to make an instant decision on anything. If we have something where a decision needs to be made super quick, they have a minimum of several hours.
Sure.
They get advice by the most knowledgeable people on the planet. The job of the president is to sift through all of that and make a wise decision, not come back with an instant retort in a debate.
All right, let's do this. Let's talk about themes when we come back. We're concentrating on the presidential debates right here on the Think Tank, KTAR News.
The Think Tank, KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com.
All right, let's do this. The presidential debates this week, the fourth. Republican presidential debate, they're coming fast and furious, very unlike the Democrats. And this one was a little snooze fest. What themes are you seeing here,
Okay,
Doc?
And by themes, I mean things that most everybody was saying more or less the same thing. One, we want to be tough. We want to stand up to bad guys, whoever they are. Even when, in some cases, I cringed at the riskiness, like no-fly zone in Syria. Sounds good until you realize that there's Russian planes flying in there. I want to know if are you telling me you're going to shoot down Russian planes? That concerns me. We're against government, okay? Leading me to wonder why they want to run it. But we're against government, government bad. We're against taxes. So everybody's proposing a tax rate.
Wait. You're way oversimplifying that. Well, they're not saying, we're against taxes. We're against government. But I've been a member of government for, that's silly.
No, but
they're against big government. They're looking to shrink government.
Okay.
Look, I'm not a fan of the Dems or the Republicans. I'm not a fan of anyone right now running for president. I'm telling you, I'll be very open and honest with you. I'm not a fan of any of them.
All right.
But we can't just paint over the brush like that.
But they're saying big government. I'll accept that as a modification.
No higher taxes.
And they're also proposing rates. When they're proposing a rate of 15% of taxes, nobody has any idea listening to that what that means in terms of the budget. You're lopping 40% off the budget.
Okay.
When you
so
do that.
And
nobody's telling you what goes by the wayside when you do that.
Here's what I like.
Are you willing to eliminate Social Security and defense? We can have a 15% tax rate.
I'll eliminate Social Security all day.
We have to keep Social Security taxes because that's part of what the income is.
Try to
eliminate Social Security and keep Social Security taxes. And look at the insurrection.
Here's what we'll do. We'll talk about this. We'll have the. Let me see here. We'll have the program debate, whether it's their program on taxes, immigration, any of that, when the other side starts bringing out their programs. At least these guys have the chops to say, this is what I'm going to do, instead of middle class, yay, higher minimum wage, yay. That's all. That's the other cheerlead
side. They're all against minimum wage. They're going to get decimated on that one in November.
But if there's one example of the minimum wage raised to $15 an hour, it's Seattle. Yep. Let's go check that out.
Let's see what happens.
Businesses are closing at a rapid clip.
Fair point. They haven't raised it yet, so it couldn't happen yet. Anyway, they're all against Obamacare, but nobody has an alternative. That's another one. And another theme, and we have a little clip on this one. We're against regulation. Let's see what Jeb Bush had to say on that.
On the regulatory side, I think we need to repeal every rule that Barack Obama has in terms of work in progress. Every one of them. Hillary Clinton.
Repeal every regulation
As it says to work in progress. What did he mean by that? What does that mean?
I think that meant anything that's on its way.
Okay, just shut it down, essentially. Okay, got it.
I mean, to me, that was sort of like the Republican chair in Maricopa County telling the voters, you know, vote against all these school bonds. That just sort of says to me that it's sort of mindless. I'm against everything. By the way, 23 out of 26 won despite that.
Oh, yeah.
You know, if they came out and said this one and this one and this one are excessive, but these others are OK, then you'd pay attention.
OK.
But the other theme, and this is a big and interesting one, is on the subject of immigration. Donald Trump doubles down.
We will have a wall. The wall will be built. The wall will be successful. And if you think walls don't work, all you have to do is ask Israel. The wall works, believe me. Properly done. Believe me.
Senator Rubio.
Can we comment on that?
One quick comment. Yes.
Well, look, in 1986, Ronald Reagan basically said the people who were here, if they were law-abiding, could stay. But if people think that we are going to ship 11 million people who are law-abiding, who are in this country, and somehow pick them up at their house and ship them out of Mexico... to Mexico, think about the families. Think about the children. Come on, folks. We all know you can't pick them up and ship them back across the border. It's a silly argument. It's not an adult argument. It makes no sense.
All I can say, you're lucky in Ohio that you struck oil. That's for one thing. Let me just tell you, Dwight Eisenhower.
Anyway, that was Donald Trump, and that the challenge was by John Kasich, and it'll be interesting to see whether Kasich gets any traction. And clearly, it's not a majority position, but Donald Trump has doubled down afterwards. By the way, even after the debate, he basically has gotten into the deportation. He's challenged you can't deport 11 million people, and he says yes, we can. And
the lines are drawn on that he's talking to one group of people. Who's he talking to?
Well, he's talking to Republican primary voters.
He's talking to very right-wing Republicans because those are our primary voters. So he is talking to primary voters, and he's smart, and he's going to get those votes.
Now, an interesting thing here. So John Kasich took him on. You know who went to Kasich's defense? Jeb Bush.
12 million illegal immigrants to send them back is just not possible. And it's not embracing American values. And it would tear communities apart. And it would send a signal that we're not the kind of country that I know America is. And even having this conversation sends a powerful signal. They're doing high fives in the Clinton campaign right now when they hear this. What we need to do is allow people to earn legal status where they pay a fine, where they work, where they don't commit crimes, where they learn English, and over an extended period of time, they earn legal status. That's the path, a proper path to make this work.
Senator Rubio.
Now, one thing I want to say that I find really interesting
that
about
none
this,
of them are talking like grown-ups?
No, it's that Jeb Bush is supporting Kasich's position. Who's the top tier candidate here?
They're shooting themselves in the foot. Trump is the only one that's playing that card right. Because he has to play to two states, and he has to play to the right of the right wing on that state, and they want us to ship people back. He wants to get to the next level. He knows how to get to the next round.
He's clearly the red meat guy, and if you are absolutely obsessed on the immigration issue, Trump staked out clear ground. He's your guy.
Yeah, that, and that's what I'm saying. That's he knows exactly how to get to the next round, and that's exactly what he's doing. He's not going to start to play the middle. He'll play the middle when it's time to play real ball, and that's when he'll play the middle. And trust me, he'll do it brilliantly. Well, he's a smart guy. People blow him off as some idiot. He's a brilliant man.
Well, both he and
Ben Carson.
Ben Carson, thank you. You knew where I was going on that. Thank you. Sometimes names just don't.
I got you, man.
I got a mental picture of the guy, right? The doctor. They were both expected by all of the pundits, and I will put myself in that category. I said, these guys are going to self-destruct and do so quickly.
Me too.
And it hasn't happened.
Yeah, exactly. They're playing to the religious right wing of the party.
Well,
and we're talking about the pyramids being built for Joseph.
I think Dr. Carson actually is the guy who has the religious vote. I think Trump has the anti-immigration vote.
Yeah.
The reason Carson is so high is he has co-opted. You notice that Santorum is nothing. Huckabee is nothing. Santorum, Huckabee, and Carson collectively are the religious candidates, and Carson has that vote. The others
Santorum, surprisingly, in the little kids debate, the kids table, the pre-debate debate.
The guys who are on their way out, basically.
Yeah, it actually had, in my opinion, had a decent show. Mm-hmm. I mean, he actually seemed, for the first time, he seemed like he had a head on his shoulders. Yeah. He's usually seemed to me all wacko, but he actually seemed like he had a head on his
shoulders.
You
know what? Doesn't matter at this
point.
Nobody else is getting promoted from the kids table. Carly Fiorina was the one that did it, and frankly, I think she's got a short term out of it.
You
but
wrote
nobody
philosophy
else
on my notes.
Oh, that's on that segment. That's upcoming.
What
We're going to talk about philosophy in segment three.
Philosophy.
And,
I like
yeah,
that.
Yeah.
I majored in. No, I didn't major in philosophy. It's next on the Think Tank.
The Think Tank. KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com.
Okay, here we're back here with Mike Russell, Mike O'Neill here, and I promised you that we would talk. Who would think that in the Republican debate, philosophy would become an issue? But Marco Rubio raised.
Wait, why would you say that? Why would you say who would think? What, they're not philosophers? They didn't go to college? These are educated men.
Yeah, well. But
doctors and some neurosurgeons.
And
I would think philosophy popped up every now and again.
But philosophy was attacked. Marco Rubio.
Welders make more money than philosophers. We need more welders and less philosophers. And if we do that.
And then that was Marco Rubio.
Yeah.
And then after the debate, there was a press conference and he doubled down on the point.
Good.
I believe that before you take out a student loan, you deserve to know and to be told how much people make when they graduate from that school with that degree, because you deserve to know that the market for Greek philosophers has tightened over the last 2,000 years. I'm going to tell you right now, I am not going to win the philosophy vote in America.
He's right, and he's right. He's right, and he's right, and he's right. He can't be more right. That is genius. That's brilliant.
Okay.
Wouldn't you like to have known? Honestly, wouldn't you like your kids to know? When they take out a student loan, if they take out a student loan exactly from that school, what the majors are making and that, what they're making and their ability to pay that loan back and how much their payments will be each month, I think that is brilliant.
Okay.
It's brilliant.
I think it would have been interesting had he looked across the dais to Carly Fiorina, worth $59 million, philosophy major, Stanford.
Sure. Okay, good.
Okay.
Maybe he was taking a shot at her.
Reid Hoffman, LinkedIn, billionaire.
Yeah.
Philosophy major.
Mm-hmm.
Not philosophy, but classics. Ted Turner. Examples.
If you're going to cherry pick examples, I'll start cherry picking examples of people. Wait, with high school diplomas.
Absolutely.
That are billionaires.
Okay, so let's move away from this.
Come on.
The average annual wages of people with philosophy degrees range from $37,000 to $83,000.
Right.
For welders,
so you take the median there. It's 50,
take the median,
it's the median income.
Take the for welders, the salary range is $23,000 to $63,000.
Okay.
Okay, one more point. Do you know who absolutely kicks butt on the LSAT, the medical school? You know who scores the highest on the entrance exam for business schools?
I'm gonna guess philosophy.
Philosophy majors absolutely dominate
now,
the scores
on.
Of
I
people who
stop.
Major in business
stop.
To take the test to get into business school.
So let's look at job opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
If I go out there and just say to the normal world, not to, I'm going to go to be a doctor or a lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
And forget about lawyers. Anyway, the job opportunities for welders are more abundant than they are for philosophy majors. It just is what it is.
Well,
if I can make well over $100,000 a year, underwater welding on all these oil rigs out of Los Angeles and Long Beach. Yeah. There are opportunities there that are more abundant for a welder, and we're just using Rubio's example, than there are for philosophy.
Absolutely
majors.
Disagree. Okay. Absolutely disagree. And here's why. No, you do not see a wanted philosopher.
Thank you.
Absolutely. But you want to go to medical school? Philosophy majors.
I said for my example, we take med school out. I said we take that out because this is why
we're doing a whole segment on, because this got my dander up. People don't understand for a lot of the liberal arts what philosophy does. It doesn't teach you how to sit around in a coffee house and philosophize. What philosophy teaches you how to do is how to process information, how to think logically rather than emotionally, and how to process arguments. Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. I mean, it is not the only skill, but people that do well are people who master a discipline. And I come from two mathematicians, my parents both, okay. And I appreciate that. And actually, you know, the two intersect. One of the things my dad...
Philosophy in algebra.
Yeah. Symbolic logic. It's called symbolic logic. My dad taught it to me in grade school out of his college texts. And that course you will find...
This is explaining a lot now. Now I'm learning a lot about
that. You will find that course in a mathematics department cross-listed in a philosophy department. It is the intersection of mathematics and philosophy.
Fascinating.
And yes, the two intersect.
Listen.
And in essentially, philosophy really pushes the brain not in what to think, but in the thinking process. And those are skills, frankly, those are the kind of skills you'd love to see in a president. I talked about that before. The most important skill for a president is to be able to sift in a lot of conflicting information and that's provided by experts and process it in a way that gives you an optimal decision.
I'm not against it in any way. I'm a math freak, by the way. Yeah. I love math. I'm all about math. But let me go back to this here, where he should have, and this is where they missed the mark. Because what they were doing is taking a pot shot at some sort of higher education pot shot.
It was a cheap shot, too.
Well, here's the deal. If I were up there, this is what I would say. Then what's our alternative? It's the other side of the ball, the Democrats, where they want to turn college into 13th through 16th grade, yet with ashtrays. That's what they want to do. They want to completely destroy the value of a bachelor's degree. So now they want to make it public schooling. Every one of them has some sort of, not a program, they've alluded to free higher education, taxpayer-funded higher education.
Well, who pays for it? That's a separate question with what you're being taught. By the way, I have no problem. I mean, good, solid vocational education is fine. There are indeed way too many people who are being channeled to college who don't leave high school with college-level skills.
Amen,
and they have no business of going to college, because the only thing you get is dumbed-down college. And
thank you.
And those folks get out with a degree and they find the degree is not worth it.
Thank you very much. And that's what I'm saying. So why don't you take that effort and that energy and put it back into high schools and make kids actually ready for college.
Absolutely. Ready for college. And frankly, I have no problem with steering some people into good technical vocational training. What I resented and I thought was a pandering to ignorance was the cheap shot at a discipline that, frankly, everybody on that dais could have used more of.
So he could have said ancient Greek languages would have been a better thing than saying philosophy. You know, philosophy just
again,
got your crow.
That's Ted Turner's major, by the way. He did okay.
Ancient Greek languages is Ted Turner's classics.
And that's number, ancient Greek languages.
And Time Warner, one of the number one contributors to Hillary's campaign, by the way. So when you see CNN,
he doesn't own it. He sold it. Well, he's out. He collected his billions and he bought half of Montana.
Okay. Well, yeah. His son, by the way. Can I just mention this? His son, huge outdoorsman, huge hunter. Mm-hmm. He had his own hunting show. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Bono's Hunting is what it's called.
But, cheap shot at a discipline. The point of higher education is to master a discipline. And it's not that the facts you learn about ancient Greek culture, it's what you learn about how to process information, the discipline. That's what goes with you. Because you know what?
Would it made you feel better if he said majored in Sanskrit? What he said,
it's the level at which you do it. I can tell
no,
you.
I'm saying, would it made you felt better if he just didn't say philosophy? Okay.
If somebody, he said finger somebody painting, ran underwater a business basket and weaving. Hired 1,500 people over 30 years, I will tell you the most useless degree I ever found.
Basket weaving.
Business. Dang.
Okay.
Kids come out with a bachelor's in business, and they had great suits. They look good.
Yeah.
They had a nice-looking resume, and then you probe for what do you really know.
Yeah.
And they learned how to present themselves.
Sure.
I saw some of the most impressive PowerPoints didn't have any
Excel
content to them.
Excel spreadsheets that were awesome.
And they looked really – and I had this thing with all these words on it, and all I wanted to know is, all right, that looks pretty cool. How'd you make it look like that? But it wasn't substance that was going to actually do anything.
No, I'm with you. I'm with you on that.
I've done well with people. Actually, it's people that excelled in something, whether it's philosophy, English, master some discipline. That's what it's about. Because you know what? They're the kinds of skills that people need to lead. The specific knowledge, they're going to be dealing with issues that haven't been invented yet, and you need the intellectual process to deal with that. And that's what you get in philosophy, in some higher, some discipline.
College
that
isn't for everybody. How about that? Let's put that.
Absolutely.
That's why I tell my kids, you will go to post-high school education. I don't care what that is. Some sort of learning. It doesn't have to be a four-year. You could go be a Harley mechanic and work with Bob Parsons. All right, when we come back, let's talk about the trends of these debates and more observations next, right here on The Think Tank.
The Think Tank. KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com.
We've written a think tank, strongly worded email to Marco Rubio and his campaign. Philosophy majors, unite! All right, Doc. You okay now? You are fired up.
I found that to be ignorant and offensive.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, that bothered me. It was kind of a throwaway line. It wasn't given with a great deal of thought. I'm sure a lot of people sat there and nodded, but frankly, it didn't conform to the facts.
It got you. So does anything Bernie Sanders say fire you up? Because that's got to fire you up because you're a common sense thinking man.
Oh, Bernie, he's just getting a little off topic from where I want to go. His appeal is, what's interesting? It's the kind of the same appeal that Trump has. I mean, they're worlds different.
Interesting.
Authenticity.
Oh, I agree.
People sense that nothing they're saying is being poll tested. They're telling you what they believe. And there are not an insignificant number of people said, I really like Donald Trump, but he gets out on voting for Bernie Sanders.
Yeah, and I'm telling you,
would blow your mind.
You talk about authenticity. We'll get to trends and observations in a second. Speaking of authenticity, I was I do the timelines for the morning news, and I was doing one on Jesse Ventura. Jesse the Body Ventura of WWF fame, right?
Now that must have been a fun interview.
And when he became, and it is, by the way, and if you call him Jesse, if you call him anything other than governor, he'll hang up on you.
Oh, really?
No lie.
Really?
So he's an interesting cat.
He had his moment of fame.
Interesting cat. But when he was elected governor, and that's what he was elected governor on, everyone just said, this guy talks straight. He's not a politician. He shoots it straight. He just speaks from the heart, and he's authentic. I'm in.
Yep.
About substance. I'm in.
Arizona, Ev Meekum.
Same thing. Well,
all over the map in terms of where their politics are. But,
okay, well, listen, Jesse at least finished his term as governor.
Okay, I want to say a couple of points to give you perspective on where we stand.
Okay.
Historical data in this month, second week of November, in the various elections, I'm not talking about, in each case, the incumbent president because they were going to win.
Yeah, of course.
2004 cycle. There's an incumbent Republican. The leader among Democrats, Howard Dean.
Howard Dean, until he went nuts. Remember him? Wow!
Okay.
Yeah!
2008 cycle, no incumbent, so we have both a Democrat and a Republican. Hillary Clinton leads the Democratic field by 23 points. She will continue to lead the Republican field for 96 more days. Republican side leader, do you remember that one?
Who?
Rudy Giuliani. And he will lead for 59 more days.
9/11. What are you running on? 9/11. What are you running on? 9/11. That's
well, that was Joe Biden's greatest line. A noun, a verb, and 9/11.
That's awesome.
Greatest put down line of verb. Okay, moving forward. 2012. We have an incumbent Democrat, so we're not going to talk about that. Leader of the Republicans. Do you remember that one?
Do not.
Herman Cain.
Herman
Cain. Yep. He will lead for two more days. And by the way, in 2012, I've seen the charts on this, and there were like six people who led at various. So before we get too excited about Donald Trump and Ben Carson leading the field, let's remember history. The answer is this is very, very early.
But
very few people other than us political junkies have paid a whole lot of attention yet.
But understand this, and I think you're wrong there, because I think a lot of people that aren't political junkies are actually paying attention because of all the press that the two of them are getting. So it's impossible for them not to pay attention at this point, because that's exactly what they're seeing in the media, Ben Carson and Donald Trump. Period. They're dominating every news cycle there is.
They are. The one that really did for a while, I saw the figures, somebody measured the actual amount of news coverage.
It was a blind.
And it was like, Donald Trump is getting 25%.
Yes.
Then they looked at how much coverage. He was getting 85% of the coverage.
It's unbelievable.
So it's the only name anybody who's not paying attention to stuff heard.
Right. So we say, because back when they announced, right, you know this, Doc, and I think you'll admit this too, and I gladly admit it. I thought they were, before they even opened their mouth, they were done. They wouldn't even be considered as an option. Right? Here we go with the Trump again. Roll your eyes. Let's get some clips out of his announcement, because it's going to be a ton of fun. And then that's it. He's going to filter off. Holy cow. None of us saw this coming. This might be a type of election cycle, because you went through those that were leading in campaigns at this day. Man, this is different than we've seen.
There is no guarantee, the historical stuff that I gave you,
right,
there's no guarantee that that's
right.
replicated.
Right.
I mean, the guys are on top.
Different.
It's possible they stay on top.
Yeah.
What I'm saying is, before we get too excited, let's remember recent history. There were people who were ascendant early on. And the point of my statement is, November is early. Nobody has voted yet.
I agree.
Nobody will vote until February, by the way. Last time it was early January. This time it's February. We moved the calendar back a month. Nobody votes until February. I believe in Iowa they'll start taking it serious around the 1st of January,
mm-hmm.
you know, and New Hampshire a little bit after that. I have one other big observation, and this is something I ran across this morning, and it, I think, could play really large.
Right.
And that has to do with the sequential nature of the primaries. You know, we got 10 candidates. We know that after New Hampshire, I tell you it's 2.5 after New Hampshire.
Okay.
Don't know who that is, but I'm saying usually there's two primaries candidates, and then there's somebody who's hanging on. That's been the typical number. Might be three, might be four. It's going to be a way smaller number.
Sure.
They're going to fall by the wayside fast. If I'm wrong, it's because they all got their own pet billionaires, and they only quit when the—
Don't
but,
we all.
But my guess is that the billionaires bail out. I mean, these guys are businessmen. If they see an investment that's not going to win, they're going to pull out. But here's the other factor. Through the primaries of March 8, in other words, the early primaries, in the Republican primaries, 63% of the early vote is evangelical white Protestants.
That's exactly what we talked about earlier in the show, that's who Ben Carson and Donald Trump are pining to right
and
now.
And for the overall Republican primary, that number is only 38%. In other words, the states that come first among Republicans are heavily populated by evangelicals. Their voice will be magnified, because they will determine who gets sifted out of the early process.
Absolutely.
And by the way, I think you're wrong on the evangelical. Trump isn't getting it. It's Ben Carson.
I mean, he's getting affluent voting white people. Whether they're evangelical or not, he's
getting the angry vote.
Especially in those states.
And I think it's more downscale.
By the way, those are the states that you probably see most of Joe Arpaio's money coming from. Those are the people that don't understand immigration, don't get immigration. Because they see it on Fox News. I'm mad at immigration.
They're taking
our jobs.
They're downscale people. Yeah, they're taking my job. They are not. The immigrants are not taking the job of the country club Republicans. Those people are not incensed about immigration. In fact, a lot of them like it because they get to hire people cheap.
Yeah, I agree with that. Yeah,
but there's a serious question whether there's anything left in the country club wing of the Republican Party. They are very. I mean, that's the Kasich and Bush wing, and they're in single digits.
They're done.
So, you know, at least for now.
Right. I agree with
that. Two points.
Here we go.
This. One is it's early. Two, evangelicals play really big in the Republican primary in the early states. till March 8th. And that will have a big effect on the way all of this comes out.
You wanted my prediction?
Sure.
Jesse the Body Ventura will join the race. I'm not lying. He will. Yeah. He will. I'm not kidding. I asked him point blank, and he said, and I said, so you're not running. He said, I did not say that. And then he started laying out some strategy, and he's going to join the race.
I'll give you a couple more. Rand Paul probably on life support. I think he's the next guy out. Carly maybe after that, but being the only
Carly
woman,
after the I think only, after
only,
the primaries.
Only being the only woman on the dais, that may keep her in just a little bit. Bush's closing was odd. He says, I want to be president because I'm going to fix the VA. That's an important thing, but I don't think it's the way you hang your hat on running for president of the United States on. So,
I think the three that end are Carson, Trump, and Rubio. I think if you put money on three, I'd put money on those three. Might be a fourth and a fifth, but if you want to put money on
Texas
on
senator, maybe in there too. But that's
I think that's it.
But
yeah.
I think those three are the safe money unless Ben Carson implodes. And there's no sign of that yet.
What in the world could Ben Carson say to make him implode? Because he said everything else hasn't imploded.
And his folks are sticking with him.
How about that?
And I think it's, you know, and it's a lot of that is this narrative. I'm a reformed. I was this bad guy in the ghetto and doing all sorts of bad
stuff.
I think he was always a mild man. And I think he got pressured by a publisher 20 years ago.
That's like Joe Biden saying he's every guy, blue-collar cat, too. I mean, it's just, it's a politician thing is what it is.
That book was written way before he ever thought of being a politician. They were trying to make a good story. And it plays to the redemption narrative of the religious base. I was this badass guy, and now I'm
but
reformed.
It's so hard for him because
I was a badass guy back in the day.
He's so boring.
Not credible as
he
that.
I can't see him. He's a gangster. Holy cow.
Yeah, I don't see him as a gangster.
Doc, good times. Thank you, Doc O'Neill. On behalf of the entire KTA, our news staff, and hey, Jason over there, my man. Thank you very much. It's Mike Russell, KTAR News.